something has to respect. Just accept something has to sympathy. Just accept something has to understanding. Don't give me freedom cause I'm not giving you yours. Fuck off the sympathy. Fuck off the sympathy. Fuck off the sympathy. Fuck off the sympathy. Don't give them freedom cause they're not gonna give me yours.
Hello and welcome to A Had to Be Said. This will be a continuation on the series of episodes discussing the red pill, both as concept as well as document. In the previous episode, we introduced the red pill and we talked about the definition in which a red pill essentially means accepting a harsh truth as opposed to a nice lie, coming from the movie The Matrix, and how the right has adopted this to mean that they're racist, sexist, whatever you want to say, views on the world, which really are all about white Christian American homogeny as being the power force in the world, that is the truth. And so all these red pills are, you know, explaining, you know, why racism doesn't exist, how actually white Christian people in the US are victims of racism, why sexism doesn't exist, why there's a, you know, weird communist conspiracy somehow connected to corporate Democrats. So all these conspiracies, right, that kind of justify this feeling of victimization, even though this group of people holds really the economic and cultural power in the US. So what's the source for this? Well, the source is a document that I received from an image board, and it was from a white nationalist. And it really does explain essentially the key points to mainstream right-wing discussions and talking points. However, you know, when you listen to more mainstream folks and even YouTube personalities, their definitions are very vague. And I challenge you to do so, to go listen to even a CPAC speech, for instance, or any Republican discussing their platform, any kind of Twitter or YouTube right-wing personality describing what it means to be a patriot. You'll see that they're much better explaining what they're not and what they're against. And that when they talk about who they are, it's very vague in their platitudes, and they're mostly rooted in things like Christianity, freedom, liberty, patriot. But these things aren't well-defined. This red pill document drills down and kind of shows, okay, so we have these platitudes that are almost like public facing, and this is the thought behind them. This is where they come from. This is where they originate from. And it's almost like the life cycle of a meme, which was discussed in the previous episode, in which it might start out blatantly racist or anti-Semitic, but then get softened and presented in a way for which it can get by, you know, censorship on social media platforms. So the example that was provided in the last episode was something that might say on 4chan, you know, white genocide. And then as that meme progresses and gets to a Facebook group, it might say something like, it's okay to support your heritage, with like a white child on it. And so the just the life cycle of that messaging and where the origin of it comes from. Really, when you get down to the right-wing idea of the red pill, it's just that, honestly, truth is conspiracy. And we're going to get to one of the oldest conspiracies in this episode, a key root to conspiracy thought as it relates to Christianity in Western culture, of course, predating the United States. But a reason why these ideas have persisted for so long and seem so familiar to people. In the introduction, which we also covered in the last episode, we talked about some of the key themes that this document uses to describe the opposition, the left. And these are, you know, kind of like pedophilia rings, Satanism, communism, and where they're coming from in this document, a very Christian point of view, a very literal, real world, good versus evil type thing. So it sets up basically the idea again that conspiracies are the truth. And it does that through a number of methods. And you can go back and listen to the first episode, even though it's a little long, to see exactly how that, what I would say is, you know, the soft pilling begins, even though this document is really meant for true believers, people that are already pilled, you know, white nationalists and right wing, I would say extremists, but not really. Just, you know, what would have been a right wing extremist 30 years ago, but today is just kind of like a moderate right winger. So, you know, getting back into this document again, that was shared by a white nationalist on a imaging board site to me. The second part is called Unmasking the Serpent. And the first episode of the Red Pill, there's a lot of opinion and commentary by me, a lot of background. In this, it's really going to get more into the documents and the core ideas of where this just batshit stuff is coming from in terms of the right. So Unmasking the Serpent. It's a short section, it's only a few pages, but it's very significant to the right-wing idea of the Red Pill. It's in a key role. It's a way that a conservative can get around the dilemma of opposing those who are protesting for justice and equity, for example, without accepting the role of being opposed to justice and equity. You know, conspiracy is the linchpin to having this very stupid jujitsu happen mentally, in which essentially it can project and you know, put upon others that in which they're doing. It's very much in that vein, using the other person's force against them. All right. So this section is, just to put it blatantly, kind of a jumble fuck, but It is important again because it sets everything up. It begins with an interview from Yuri Benzinov, and Yuri is a darling of the right. He was a defector from the Soviet Union. He defected in the early 70s, 1970, I believe, to Canada. And before that, he had been working in India. And at that time, being away from the Soviet Union, he began to see just how oppressive the government was, and specifically the KGB with censorship. And in that regard, he's right. And I think that, you know, any leftist would agree that police / authoritarian states are not good things. Before we get into what Yuri said and why the author is using him as a source, you know, after looking at some interviews from Yuri, reading some articles that he wrote all the way up to the mid-1980s. I think that it's important to know before you even get into it, before you start saying, yeah, that makes sense, that at the end of the day, really what Yuri is getting at, and he talks about all different things. And, you know, unfortunately, a lot of them are straw men kind of arguments. But really, in this context, what he's talking about is removing religion as a force of authority in a nation. And so, you know, if you don't believe that religion should be in a place of power within a society, then honestly, a lot of what Yuri says doesn't really apply. However, the fact that he does is exactly why the author is using him, because he's setting up a conspiracy, a red pill, that really all these things that he's going to introduce, and he starts with communism via the Soviet Union, via this person, Yuri Bezmenov, that these people are trying to secularize, humanize, and remove Christianity from the United States. And, you know, honestly, he's right. I mean, I do believe in separation of church and state. And it's a confounding section, because there are points where, just reading it, I mean, I'm thinking, well, you know, he's talking about the commandments as a source of authority, but I mean, that's the judicial, like, we have the judicial system with you know, a jury of peers. And I mean, that's secular, right? A lot of the stuff that he argues against is kind of anti-Enlightenment stuff. So it's confusing, because it's supposedly coming from this, you know, red, white, and blue background. And it gets really theocratic. But I suppose that is the red pill, that the red, white, and blue stuff does inherently involve Christianity. So anyway, Yuri Bezmenov. Yuri is used by the right because he gave a series of steps that he claims the KGB used to demoralize countries via propaganda. And the only portion of this that you could even try to apply to modern society might be the first, because after that he gets into Marxist-Leninists taking control of the military, and I mean, just things that never happened. And, you know, even through hyperbolic analogy and metaphor, you can't, you know, strain to make it appear as if these things happened. However, the first step in demoralization, he said it took around 15 or 20 years, and that time has since passed since he made these claims. But that in this demoralization period, essentially religion is removed. And the author of the Red Pill kind of interjects and claims as well that isms kind of take the place. And really, without going down the rabbit hole of describing all of this, what the author is claiming is that secular forces that study society, really, you know, the field of sociology, the author tries to make it seem like it's this evil communist conspiracy, but it's just anybody who's objectively, you know, looking at quantitative or qualitative analysis, research of social trends via groups of people, right? So just building reports based off of commonalities with the control, and that might be religion, it might be race, it might be geography, what have you. But that this is in and of itself a conspiracy to secularize society, because he, like Yuri, is essentially claiming that you need religion for society to function properly. Now, here's the thing with Yuri. The author in the Red Pill kind of expands on this. What he's trying to set up is the idea that activists, researchers, right, professionals in these fields are either knowingly or unknowingly participating in the communist plot to kind of like artificially divide the country and have it collapse from within. Now, at least in these initial steps, now Yuri gave a lot of lectures and interviews, so maybe by the time it got to be 1984, 1985, he was saying this stuff, and I haven't seen it. He's given a lot of really bad lectures. I saw one on equality that was just ridiculous. I mean, just a clear misunderstanding of what we're talking about. But in this context, anyway, what the author is trying to set up is this idea that, you know, activists, so, you know, Black Lives Matter, Antifa, all these boogeymen for the right are participating in this, and also that quote unquote elites. And we saw elites in the first section, right? Are part of this. And again, either they don't know it, or you know, maybe some of them do, but that this is all just communist brainwashing and propaganda. And at the end of the day, it comes down to this conspiracy of, you know, replacing the commandments as a source of authority for morality to a humanist kind of list of laws or rules that people need to follow, and that because humans are not God, that this unintentionally or intentionally creates a sense of relativism. So if God says, for instance, thou shalt not kill, that's it, right? It would be nice if Christians actually followed that. But and so the author says, when that's replaced with something like, you know, thou shalt not be racist. And I think most people would say, well, don't be either. But the idea is that racist or racism and isms are things that are created by people. And because of that, these things can change, right? They're not of divine origin. And because they can change, whoever, you know, owns that the power to make these changes truly is whom is guiding society. And that's really where the author is getting at. And I don't know about Yuri if he got that far into it or not, but you know, Benzenoff definitely did subscribe to the fact that societies need religion. So the author is setting this up to say that these are the bad people. And these bad people are trying to move religion because religion is an obstacle to them usurping power. And that's really what all of this means. Now, we'll get to, you know, what Yuri actually said, right? Not what the author says Yuri said, but this becomes highly ironic because we'll see in a moment that there's a lot of projection happening here, as there always is with the right. Okay, so it's rambling, but this section moves on to attack some other things that you know, if you've interacted with the right at all or had a drunk uncle that voted for Ron Paul or something, it gets into the fiat system. It attacks the stock market and the Federal Reserve. But this is the key, I think, to this section, okay? And I hope that, you know, it's been confusing to this point because it should. I mean, it's very confusing. But you know, we started out with this KGB defector, and then we went down a road of supposed propaganda, and this weird attack on secularism and kind of enlightenment thought, social contract theory, to emerge into a conspiracy in which, you know, clearly pro-corporate centrists, capitalists, are actually communist provocateurs, and that people that are protesting social injustice are acting on their behalf, all the way up to China following through with the ideas of Karl Marx by absorbing the US labor market. All right, so here we are, and now we're into, you know, just those good old American conspiracies, right? Just the fiat system, the Federal Reserve, the stock market. I mean, these are things that any libertarian or any right winger will bring up if you give them enough Bud Lights. But this is where the gem is. This is the true heart, and where I think the red pill really begins. It's not really with, you know, in the first episode, we talked about Jeffrey Epstein and pedophiles and stuff, and really just, you know, bringing the idea that conspiracies are real into the light. And it isn't all this kind of just crazy thoughts that in this episode brought us to this point. This is it. I think that this is the key, and I'm going to reinforce this at the end. But along with this list of people that are supposed to be involved in this conspiracy, with Democrats and Antifa and Black Lives Matter, is again, you know, the stock market and people that control that, the Federal Reserve, people who control that, and usury. And usury is just thrown in there, but wow, is this so important? I mean, this is it. This is the key. And this is what a lot of people on the right don't understand. And so this is where you really need to dig your hooks into and just grasp. This is where all this bullshit comes from. Okay, so usury. Usury is important because it is tied to anti-Semitism. And this reaches back the Black Death, you know, the 1400s, the 1300s in Europe. This, and even before that, I mean, this goes all the way back, right? All the way back to Pontius Pilate. And it's extremely important because it is so tied into Christianity and it is so tied into Western civilization, right? At least modern Western civilization. Okay, so what is usury then? Usury is essentially just a way to loan money, right? And in that loaning of money, there's supposedly scrupulous and unethical things attached to it. And, you know, legally, we might think of that as like a loan shark, you know? But in this context, what it really means is the idea that when you you're loaning money, that you have to pay interest. And in early Christianity, as well as other religion, I mean, including India and Islam, usury is seen as being a sin. And so in early Europe, people who took positions of loaning money, right, were oftentimes Jewish people. And this is the key that will unlock it all. It's amazing, but let's just kind of read through this and let it wash over us. All right. After this idea of usury is introduced, there's a sentence that follows it that lists names of people that are involved in this. And those names include Epstein, Weinstein, George Soros. They're all Jewish, right? And it's not a coincidence. The author then claims that these people, these Jewish people, are sponsoring groups like Black Lives Matter and Antifa. And so now we're getting into the old Christian anti-Semitic conspiracy of Jewish global dominance. And you can say Satanist, you can say communist, you can say Democrat, but this is where it all comes from. And those are modern, relatively modern terms, right? They all go back to this. And this is why it's so easy to rehash it. This is why QAnon was so easy to make. This is why all these conspiracies, the Federal Reserve, the fiat system, you know, all of this stuff, Yuri and KGB, all of this is really, when you get down to it, tied to Christianity and this age-old core tenet of anti-Semitism. Okay, so these nameless stockholders and communists, what do they have in common? What is the link? And now I'm reading directly from this document. In quotes, the book of Revelations in the Bible speaks of the synagogue of Satan. And so there it is, right? This is a culmination, right? So who is Yuri talking about in terms of, you know, people that are trying to subvert the United States, really Christianity, the synagogue of Satan, and all these people that were mentioned before. And I mean, it's a laundry list, right? Antifa, Black Lives Matter, Democrats, stockholders, communists, all these people have nothing in common. I mean, as a matter of fact, they have many more things not in common that they're diametrically opposed to than they do in common, right? That Venn diagram is going to be extremely small. But to the mind of the right, when, you know, and I'm sure you've heard this, when stuff is just thrown out there, right? They're Islamic terrorists, fascists, communists, socialists, you know, and you're trying to figure out what the hell these people are talking about. I mean, they're throwing out contradictions, right? Well, this is where it's coming from, right? This idea that all of these things, it doesn't matter. You don't need to define what these things are because they are all different things that are coming from the same source, and the source is the synagogue of Satan. And the idea of the synagogue of Satan, whether it's tied to usury or blood libel as well, you know, QAnon and Adrenochrome, this stuff goes back 1300s, earlier than that, right? Very, very, very early Christian conspiracies. And they all focus on Jewish people. So yeah, you know, this is where the hardcore anti-Semitism comes in. And this is really a core piece of the red pill. This is, you know, the difference between Tucker Carlson and 4chan. And again, it's not that they're opposed to each other. It isn't like, you know, Antifa and CNN, right? I mean, just diametrically opposed. This is why the left is different than the right. You know, there's a spectrum of what's acceptable. And it's really kind of, in a way, you know, I'm sure that there are many people that never took the time to actually research what it is they support to this point. But there is, you know, a level of hiding your power level, you know? When Tucker Carlson goes on a rant about, you know, why people feel so unsettled when they see their community changing so quickly. I mean, that's white genocide, right? And that's on the spectrum of that conversation. It's not opposing. It's the same thing. It's just putting that gauge, that dial, you know, to where this is acceptable for this platform of Fox News versus what's acceptable on Facebook and Twitter and image boards like 4chan or Acoon, right? But it's all right wing. It's all on the same spectrum, right? They own it all. So, you know, there's a series of links after this in the document that discusses how Bolshevikism was Jewish as well. And this is the tie-in to communism. And this is what Hitler said. I mean, this was one of the main talking points that Hitler had when, you know, he was trying to consolidate and gain power. It is that, you know, Marx, right? Marx, Lenin, it's that Bolshevikism, right? The party that actually succeeded in the Russian Civil War. And I mean, come on. It's difficult because that's also a complicated topic. And there are many people involved. There are Mensheviks. There are all these different things involved, monarchists, right? And so the Bolsheviks were the ones that were able to consolidate power. They were a minority in the Civil War, but they were able to consolidate power. That the Bolshevik Party specifically was tied to Judaism. This is exactly what Hitler was saying when he was attempting to gain power in Germany. This was the Reichstag fire decree, in which the Reichstag, the legislative building in Germany, was supposedly set on fire. This was framed as a terrorist attack, and that terrorist attack again was blamed on communists who were directly connected to Jewish people. So this is how Hitler was able to consolidate power. The Reichstag fire decree gave Hitler special powers, right? And he was able to gain these special, extraordinary, extra presidential powers by blaming this fire on Jewish communists who committed a terrorist attack. And with the Reichstag fire decree, he was able to essentially censor opponents, create cultural and political homogeny, and forge a one-party state in which anyone who opposed the Nazi party became an enemy of the state. But anyway, in this document, right, in this document, the author is trying to connect all these things together, the synagogue of Satan, right? So how are you going to connect a conspiracy about, you know, Jewish people that goes back to the 1300s, 1200s to communism? Because, you know, he wants them to be connected, so that he can also say Democrats are communists, that Antifa is communist, that Black Lives Matter are communists. And all this was shown to us by this KGB agent who didn't really say any of this, right? But that's the supporting evidence to this conspiracy. Well, it's with the idea, and there's links provided about Jewish Bolshevikism. And, you know, Yuri isn't really mentioned again in this section. It just goes full anti-Semitism after that. But before we forget who Yuri was, and, you know, he was supposed to have been a source to cite to show, like, yeah, this is all true, right? That the red pill, the thing that you don't want to accept, is that there's actually a international global conspiracy led by Jewish people who are actually communists, but yet somehow also control private for-profit media corporations, as well as the stock market, as well as the Chinese Communist Party. I don't know how you deal with that, but I'm sure that there's something, you know, anyway. That all of these things, right, and about how really what we're talking about are just social justice movements that have been occurring since, you know, the 50s in the United States, are really not about helping people, are really about gaining control and enslaving you as a white American Christian. That all this is supposed to have been supported with Yuri, right? Well, without getting into a clear misunderstanding of what the Soviet Union really was, let's just talk about the irony here, right? The irony, well, one of the ironic things about all this is that the Mueller report and Russian interference in the 2016 election, coupled with racial division, Charlottesville, focusing on Antifa instead of the racists, a reaction to what happened with George Floyd by President Trump, the coronavirus, the poor reaction to that, which created not only economic instability, but as well as massive loss of life and lockdowns and so changes in cultural practices, leading ultimately to an insurrection on January 6th. That this is actually what Yuri was talking about. Yuri, you know, defined ideological subversion as this, in quotes. What it basically means is to change the perception of reality of every American to such an extent that despite an abundance of information, no one is able to come to sensible conclusions in the interest of defending themselves, their families, their community, and their country. And the author's trying to say, well, this is because the secularist, communist, Jewish, whatever, are trying to take Christianity out of society and create all these weird terms that no one really knows. I mean, it's sociology, okay? Right, but the irony when we continue down this, right, is who coined the term alternative facts? Right, alternative facts has its own Wikipedia page because it's now going to be part of American history. What was that, if you forget? Well, from the Wikipedia that alternative facts has, it was a phrase used by U.S. counselor to the president Kellyanne Conway during a Meet the Press interview on January 22nd, 2017, in which she defended White House press secretary Sean Spicer's false statements about the attendance numbers of Donald Trump's inauguration as president of the United States. When pressed during the interview with Chuck Todd to explain why Spicer would utter a proverbial falsehood and a provable falsehood, provable, just counting heads, Conway stated that Spicer was giving quote unquote alternative facts. And Todd responded, look, alternative facts are not facts, they are falsehoods. This is what Yuri meant. I mean, it's just so ironic. It's the right that ushered in the era of post-truth, and, you know, one in which relativism, which the author rails against in this document, remember, it's the relativism of thou shalt not kill versus it's okay to kill if it's for anti-racism, right? This weird relativism of definitions and truths. Well, you know, this is the relativism that, you know, the person's railing against, right? Alternative facts is the ultimate. One where objective facts, science, reason, logic, all become equivalent to opinions, ideas through, you know, logical fallacies or trying to poke holes in something without actually proposing something in which you support that could be an alternative truth. Jacking off, just asking questions, right? We talked about that in the critical theory episode. Well, yeah, but I read that this teacher in Florida was doing this. Therefore, right? I'm just asking questions. Well, I mean, that's as anti-logic, anti-reason, anti-science as you can get. So it's ironic that Trump and the right are the ones that really ushered in this era of post-truth, one in which relativism, which the author railed against, is king. One where objective facts, science, reason, and logic are all equivalent to opinions and ideas through logical fallacies, jacking off, just asking questions, finding random tidbits, which may or may not be true, and using that as a way to poke a hole in something as opposed to actually doing research, providing methods, showing an alternative, proving how research methods in something that you're actually arguing against led to an incorrect output, conclusion, et cetera, et cetera. So, you know, if we want a real conspiracy, how about this? Using the author's reason and logic here, how about using methods that Yuri also described to convince a population of people that, I don't know, denying medical and scientific evidence in the face of a pandemic was actually an act of rebellion and something that was done for liberty? Meanwhile, the virus runs rampant, killing citizens, filling hospitals, wrecking the economy, and creating a crisis that culminates in an attempt to stop the counting and formalizing of votes in a presidential election. Well, talk about projecting, right? But again, here's a chasm in understanding. To objective folks, this seems ridiculous and hypocritical. However, to the right, we must know that they believe that they ultimately have ownership over the US and this conversation. They are entitled to commit these acts of violence and domestic terrorism because they are the ones representing the soul of the nation. It is almost exactly what the author described when he talked about moral relativity in terms of death during anti-racist protests. People did die on January 6th, but it's okay. So I don't even want to stop it there because it also isn't this thing that centrists get into where, you know, oh, well, this is just one side. And so, you know, he's saying it's the left is saying it's okay to kill during anti-racist riots. And that, you know, you're just on the far left saying, oh, well, you know, this person is saying it's okay to kill during the Capitol insurrection and that you're both wrong. No, because that's also falling into the trap of false equivalency. There really is racism in the United States. Derek Chauvin was convicted and sentenced in a court of law. The case is closed. He killed George Floyd. And that was a main event which prompted protests from anti-racist groups. That's not an opinion. It's not equivalence. Right. There are statistics that prove racism within the judicial system. Right. There are statistics and laws that existed until very recently that segregated and separated populations of people in the United States, right? Like redlining. However, there is no evidence to prove that there was any election fraud, as Trump claimed, spurring the January 6th assault. That is not an objective truth. So there is no equivalency, right, among these groups. And that is really the irony that I find in this section. I mean, just talk about projecting. Of course, you know, this was written before January 6th, but everything that this person tried to set up to support some international, really, when you get down to it, some international Jewish conspiracy. It's just what Trump did. So here's the conclusion. All right. Really, what this section is, in a nutshell, it's just waves of information to embed anti-Semitic conspiracies into. All of the winding conspiracy roads, I mean, everything from the Chinese government taking jobs as part of a Marxist conspiracy to the fiat system, this was everywhere. All of the winding conspiracy roads that connect or don't connect, that go places or go nowhere, basically create a traffic circle or roundabout of thought. And in the middle of all the chaos and the traffic accidents and the honking of the horns is really this idea of usury, right? Usury is the practice of making unethical and immoral monetary loans. And in Western culture and Christianity, this means loans with interest. And it means specifically Jewish people. And this goes back again to the Black Death. It's a part of Western culture. It's why people that get drunk and get arrested, like Mel Gibson, go off in anti-Semitic tropes from the Catholic Church. It's why the Shylock character exists in Shakespeare plays. It's embedded in our culture. It reaches as far back as we would like it to be honest. So when folks on the right talk about global conspiracies of elites and bankers or communists or, you know, whatever they explain, progressives, radicals, this is the prism in which, you know, they're seeing it through. Because it's tempting to say, well, let's have an olive branch, right? Like, you're right. I think that big tech, we should have some antitrust laws put in place, and that big tech should be broken apart. And I think monopolies are wrong too. And, you know, we should look at global trade and look at fair trade and ethical trade and how, you know, current free trade is exploiting foreign labor markets and as well as undercutting standards of living in the United States. Like, you know, those would be reasonable things that a moderate might fall into, but you're never going to get it, right? You're never going to get that with the right, because that's not what the right, that's not where they're coming from, right? Now, I'm sure that there are some on the right that just see it as communism or whatever, but those who have looked more in depth into these conspiracies will inevitably see that even Chinese communism, if one goes far enough back in this talk, leads to Jewish Bolshevikism, that it leads back to this anti-Semitism. And whether or not you're just anti-Semitic to be anti-Semitic, or whether or not you're anti-Semitic because you feel like Judaism is a part of an assault on Christianity. I mean, going back to the crucifixion of Jesus, right? The idea that Pontius Pilate wasn't to blame, that it was the crowd of people in Israel, well, the territory then of Jewish people that said, you know, kill Christ, right? You know, whether or not it's that kind of Christian conspiracy. All this other stuff that doesn't really make sense, right? A KGB agent, the Federal Reserve, the Chinese Communist Party, Black Lives Matter, all this stuff that has nothing to do with one another, right? The common tie is this. It's really a Christian perspective on an assault on Christianity by basically Jewish people. However, if you don't want to say Jewish people because it makes you feel bad, you could just say global elites. It's the same thing. This, however, is not the public facing. This is not Tucker Carlson, right? This is supposed to be, you know, the red pill, the hard truth. And so this author describes it as a synagogue of Satan for stockbrokers and communists. It sums up perfectly the insane and detached fantasy land in which conservatives, you know, drive their beliefs from. I know it's mind-numbing, but it's important to know. You know, we have to understand where these ideas and beliefs come from in order to effectively combat them. And again, many people who you talk to that might be spouting, you know, third generations of these conspiracies might not know this. And if you tell them this, they're not most likely going to say, oh, I didn't know that. that's crazy. You know, thank you for sharing that with me. I'll have to reevaluate my beliefs. They're probably going to call you racist for making everything about race. And, you know, fine. But you still need to be able to understand where this stuff is coming from, right? When people are deciding to attack China specifically, when people are talking about censorship from private companies and trying to say someone like, you know, President Obama that bailed out banks was somehow communist. And you're just sitting there saying, what world do these people live in? I mean, where are we coming from? Really, the red pill isn't even necessarily anti-Semitism. I think when you get down to the core of it, when we're talking about the right and you get past being patriotic and the Second Amendment and freedom and you know all these platitudes, it really comes down to this core belief that Christianity should be the guiding principle in society, in education, in politics, in law, in everything. And it's essentially promoting theocracy.
Stop giving freedom because you're not giving you eyes.